Hello. You're a small but perfectly formed audience. Thank you very much for coming on a Sunday morning. Can you hear me all right? I probably need the microphone probably in this room. So we're from the Edinburgh Festivals, and the hashtag for this event is South by Fringe Fests. And I'm Kath Mainland. I'm the chief executive of the Edinburgh Festival Fringe, which is in itself the largest arts festival in the world. And my colleague here, Andrew, is the admin director of the Edinburgh International Book Festival, which is the largest public celebration of the written word in the world. And so we are two of Edinburgh's 12 festivals, and we work collectively, as we're going to talk to you about, through an organisation called Festivals Edinburgh, which I chair, and I chair the marketing group, and Andrew chairs the environmental sustainability group and the innovation working group, which is mostly what we're going to talk to you about today. So I'll do a little bit of context setting, talk you through what the Edinburgh festivals are, the scale, what we do, and then Andrew will talk through some of the ways that we've tried to address the challenges that we face in an increasingly digital world. So lots of people have heard of the Edinburgh festivals, particularly the summer festivals, but there are in fact 12 festivals that take place throughout the year in Edinburgh. From the Scottish Storytelling Festival in the fall, which is the authentic traditional arts festival, big focus on Ceilidh culture, storytelling, traditional music, but big international links with other traditional art form festivals throughout the world. Then the Edinburgh's Hogmanay. Hogmanay is the Scots word for New Year's Eve, so Edinburgh's Hogmanay is a big public celebration of the New Year. It's an outdoor festival. It starts with a torchlight procession, culminates in a big street party over midnight on the 31st of December, and then on the 1st of January this year, a big interactive game that took place throughout the city centre. Then we have the Science Festival in the springtime, the Imaginate Festival in May, which is a primarily children's theatre festival, primarily an industry-focused festival rather than a public one. And then we move into the Film Festival, which is a film festival in June, and then a real concentration of festivals over the summer months. So seven festivals taking place in Edinburgh between July and August: the Jazz and Blues Festival, the Edinburgh International Festival, the Fringe, the Book Festival, the Art Festival, which is the visual art contribution taking place in public and the many independent art galleries in the city, the Edinburgh Mela, which is a multicultural two-day festival, outdoor two-day festival, and the Royal Edinburgh Military Tattoo, which is the military's contribution to the festival season in Edinburgh. So I'm just going to show you a wee film just to see what it is we're talking about.
We'll be right back.
So that's them. Can I ask, have any of you ever been to Edinburgh? Ah, so you know all about it. Great. Oh, I've lost the thing, Andrew. I've broken the PowerPoint. Have any of you ever performed at the Edinburgh Festivals? No. Good. Brilliant. Thank you. So 12 festivals throughout the year, each profoundly distinct, each in a sense in competition with each other. But we realised 5 years ago that there were certain aspects of the work that we were undertaking that would be more effective if we took a more collaborative and collective approach. And so we formed Festivals Edinburgh to be an overarching joint strategic body for the 12 festivals. And Festivals Edinburgh came out of three pieces of research that were undertaken in Scotland. The first was the City of Edinburgh Council's festival strategy, which was looked at recognising why the festivals were important to the city and how they could support them. We also undertook an economic impact study in 2004-05, which showed that the festivals were not just great cultural and social events for the city, but actually big business. And we commissioned a report called Thundering Hooves, which looked at the threat from other cities who had, lots of cities in the UK and around the world had cottoned on to the idea that festivals were great for the economy, they were great for social regeneration, great for tourism and all of those things, and had started investing heavily in their festivals as a way to bring life to cities. And so we commissioned a report that looked into that threat. And the result of those three bits of work was the formation of Festivals Edinburgh. So it works as an overarching umbrella organisation, really. It's made up, the board of Festivals Edinburgh is made up of the directors of each of the 12 festivals. And then there's a series of working groups that sit underneath the board that has representation from each of the festivals and work on areas where collectively we have a stronger voice or more can achieve more, I guess. So we work, there's a marketing group which I chair. The marketing work that we do is primarily international. It's primarily in markets that individually we don't have the resource to reach ourselves, and works very much with the tourism bodies in the city and in the country. We then work on programme development. We've been working very very hard with the Cultural Olympiad. We're a major partner of the Cultural Olympiad in the approach to the London 2012 Olympic Games this summer. And are hosting a big culture ministers summit in Holyrood, which is the Scottish Parliament, the day after the closing ceremony of the Olympic Games, where we'll take those international political delegations to Edinburgh to see what we do. We work on innovation, which Andrew will talk about in a minute, and we work on environmental sustainability. So recognising that the festivals have a significant environmental impact, recognising that it's difficult. They're all temporary festivals. Mostly they spring up in pop-up venues often. So recognising that it's difficult to understand that impact, but it's vital that we do. So we work with partners on a green venue initiative to benchmark and understand that impact and then look collectively to how we can lessen it. I am not a technician. So Edinburgh's festivals began in 1947, so 65 years ago, when the Edinburgh International Festival, which is a very large-scale international, primarily classical music, opera and ballet festival, and it was created as an intervention, I guess, in 1947 as a response to the war, a post-war initiative, realising that Europe was very fractured, realising that perhaps what we needed to bring the people of Europe together in this post-war environment was a cultural celebration, a reflowering of the human spirit is how they described it. And so it was created in Edinburgh because Edinburgh was one of the few cities in the UK that was still standing after the war. And it began in 1947, and in that same year the Edinburgh Festival Fringe was also created. The Festival Fringe is a open access festival. Anyone who wants to take part in it can. It began in 1947 when eight companies who were annoyed that they hadn't been invited delighted that there was a new festival taking place in Edinburgh, a bit annoyed they hadn't been invited, perhaps a bit annoyed that there were even invitations, and decided in a sort of original flash mob style that they would just do their shows anyway. They knew that there would be a media attention on the city, knew there would be an audience, and so began all those years ago alongside the Edinburgh International Festival. I've talked about the 12 festivals now that have grown up over the last 65 years, and collectively that represents 25,000 individual artists who take part in these festivals each year, taking part in over 3,000 shows. On the Fringe alone in 2011, there were 40,000 different performances. So really vast scale. And not just a public celebration, not just those artists. Each of the festivals has a trade fair element. It is essentially a marketplace for work. So we accredit between us over 2,000 members of the arts industry. So festival buyers, programmers, bookers, broadcasters, talent scout, people who are looking for the next thing, looking for the talent that's going to form the next generation of contemporary culture, if you like. We also accredit over 2,000 media, profoundly international media, who are coming to either cover work directly and review work, or also looking to come and take a temperature of the cultural environment, recognising that Edinburgh is a small and profoundly Scottish place, but actually the festivals represent this real snapshot of an international culture. Over 70 different countries have been represented in the last year across the festival programmes, and a similarly international audience and media. So a real international celebration of culture in this very small, beautiful Scottish place. Collectively, we represent 4.2 million attendees each year, and we redid the economic impact study in 2010, which was published in 2011, and combined now the festivals in Edinburgh provide £262 million of economic impact to Scotland each year. So big business. Interestingly, when we did that impact study in 2010, we didn't look just at the economic impact, but we actually also looked at the social, cultural and environmental impact of the festivals, and which gave us really good stories about how the festivals are a great part of why people want to live in Edinburgh, why people want to visit it, why it's a great place to see work, it's a great place to spark imagination of children, and all of those good kind of less tangible benefits. But of course, for us and for our funders and for the stakeholders in the government, it's a great story. £262 million of input into the economy each year, in an economy which is, of course, in the UK, certainly struggling at the moment. So an enormous amount of stuff, a real vast combination of audiences, of artists, of media, of industry. And one of the challenges that we all individually face now is how we make sense of this scale to the artists who are taking part and to the audiences who are coming to visit. So understanding that festivals will be successful if artists have a good experience when they're taking part in them and audiences have a good experience when they're watching them. And realising also that there are 7 festivals taking place in August, and if you're coming from overseas, you don't know that you're at the Jazz Festival or the Film Festival or the Art Festival. You're just coming for the Edinburgh Festivals. You want to experience all of those programmes together. And so you need intuitive places where you can go, where you can find out what's on, you can get tickets for it, you can meet other people who are interested in things that you're interested in. And I suppose providing a service to that audience and providing a service to the artists. And looking at, in a digital world, how we can use the tools at our disposal to really help navigate this vast, wonderful festival that we're all putting on each year. And certainly from a Fringe point of view, we went through a big conundrum about the data that we owned. The collective data, the Fringe data itself is vast, and whether that was commercially exploitable. Of course, it is commercially exploitable, but whether we should be commercially exploiting that, or actually whether the balance in the end would come down to our duty to the artist to disseminate that as widely as possible throughout the community, but doing it in a way where it remains accurate, it remains comprehensive, it remains up to date, because it's a very changing, dynamic environment, as all festivals are. And we were facing situations, certainly at the Fringe, probably in the other festivals, where people were just scraping our data, they were doing all sorts of things with it. And so we said, okay, we now need to take control of this data so that we can get it out there into the world and really see how we can make best use of it for the audiences and for the artists. And so the question that we're all individually and collectively asking ourselves was, okay, so how do we now take this from essentially a print-based medium into the digital opportunities that exist? And so I'll hand over to Andrew, who will take you through how we did some of that.
Thank you, Kath. So, as Kath said, we've got this challenge. We have these well-established, somewhat kind of old-world festivals who are doing an amazing thing, but are struggling to catch up with what's happening out there. And in some cases, what smaller festivals can do more easily, new starts. I mean, it's the same across technology, arts, culture. It's much, much easier for small startups to begin and to innovate than it is for people who've already achieved that kind of position. So one of the first things that we did was actually to look at some of what's out there and to look at how some of that works. And we recognized that actually being open and being innovative is a big part of it. And so we established what we refer to as the Edinburgh Festival's Innovation Lab. The Edinburgh Festival's Innovation Lab works across five kind of real areas of activity. Projects around delivering actual projects of value to the festival. Processes, looking at how the festival's processes operate, how we can take advantage of new technology, both in terms of improving the audience experience and also in terms of streamlining the day-to-day work of the festival so that we have more time to think ahead and to plan. People, which is all about looking at how we engage both our own people and outside people with what we're doing. Network, which is a sort of specialization of that, particularly in terms of industry, tech industry, design industry, and so on. And learning, the key factor out of all of this is capturing what we're picking up through these other four strands and collating that, both for Edinburgh's festivals, but also as part of what we were funded to look at, on behalf of the wider Scottish cultural and artistic sector, collating some of that in a way that has value to organisations outside the festivals. From an artistic perspective, one of the things that the festivals do is we don't produce a great deal of work. We are primarily a platform for artists and for Scottish and international producers of content. So part of the learning approach is about taking a similar approach to innovation, actually. We should be a platform for the rest of our sector. Those are quite abstract concepts, and it's probably easiest to look at some of the things that we've delivered and how that ties in. One of the first things that we did was we staged Culture Hack Scotland. This was inspired by Culture Hack, which was organised by the Royal Opera House and others in London earlier in 2010. And last year we staged Culture Hack Scotland, a 24-hour event, 50 developers, 50 culture professionals, an enormous array of data sets and information and tools available to people, workshop sessions for cultural professionals to try and put things together, to go through a sort of paper-based prototyping of a mobile site, looking at how developers could interact with us. And that produced really in those 24 hours some amazing, some really interesting projects, which all took quite different approaches to the starting off point, which was simply, how can we make something that is playful, useful, or placeful for the festival, so related to place and to Edinburgh. And one of the projects that came out of that was a project called FestaFriend, which is the kind of hacked up version of it. And that was about using the information about what audiences were going to help people meet each other. There's 4.2 million people in Edinburgh across the festivals, and actually lots of them are looking for people to meet. It started particularly focused as a kind of dating idea, but it's developed out of that actually to say, well, there are people who aren't particularly interested in dating, but who want someone to experience the festivals with, or to find people who are interested in similar things. So FestaFriend takes the data that we have and helps people to do that. There were projects like the Festival Clock, which is a visualization of the festival listings data. With 3,000 shows and, as Kath said, some 40,000 performances across the festivals, just trying to find out what you want to go and see is an enormous task. And I've discovered from coming to South by Southwest a little bit how that must feel to people who don't know anyone. Festival Clock takes the ideas that we, the festivals, had about how you list events and how you encourage people to come to things and turns it completely upside down. So these rings spiraling out are to do with price. the smaller wheels at the side are to do with age bands and so on. And all of this is interactive. So you can hover over a segment and it will just pick up a particular show. Every single segment here is a show. And the time band around the clock, the higher colours are the times at which there are more things happening and less things happening in the different festival programmes. So an interesting approach to saying, you know, trying to just read through the brochure and pick things is phenomenally difficult. Maybe something completely off the wall is a way to help audiences do it. There was also quite a fun project which we quite like called Fake Fringe. Fake Fringe took festival listings and combined them with user-generated, made-up festival listings and asked people to vote on which were real and which weren't. And you can see that, in fact, the developer has made us a special screenshot for this session with our programme content for today. Six people thought it was fake, apparently. So this, the developer, by the way, is Jareth Green, an independent Scottish developer, very interesting guy. He has some really interesting projects. He has a similar kind of voting site at the moment that he's working on called But Is It Art? Similar idea, people upload photos, you vote on is it art, is it not art. Quite fun, but also interestingly, this project, one of James's ideas was that with this number of shows, the listing becomes really important for the company in terms of attracting an audience, getting people to understand the show that they're coming to and to want to come to it. So James's idea is a bit of fun for the audience, but also it allows companies to start looking and seeing how effectively their copy lines up against other copy. Do people believe this is an actual show? And the idea is that over time that helps people to write better brochure copy. Another hack that came out of Culture Hack Scotland, and in fact this one, the book festival, we commissioned pretty much at like 4 o'clock that afternoon, just after we handed James the prize for the most useful project that he'd done in 24 hours. We'd at the book festival for a long time been thinking, you know, we should have an app. I think it's a common thing in culture at the moment. We should have an app. What should it do? We should have an app. It's a kind of, you know, there's this thing out there and we need to engage with it, but we're not quite sure. It's not really our sphere of expertise. James, in 24 hours, said, this is what it should do. And I took that back to the team and everyone went, yeah, right enough. So, short and simple, it's in fact not an app, it's a mobile site, but it gives listings of the festival in a way that's formatted for handheld, which is increasingly important. But it gives more. It gives links into authors' bibliography, their backlist titles, the stock that we hold in our festival bookshop, both of their kind of featured title for the event and also the previous events and the previous titles. It links into articles about them, reviews of their books on the Guardian newspaper's website. It links into their books on Amazon and the iBookstore. So it started to give us some information about how much our customers on site are engaging with ebooks, which for a book festival is an enormously important question. Ebooks are a massively disruptive innovation, and there is no business model for point of sale ebook retail. In fact, there's a very limited business model even for online electronic ebook retail, because all the middlemen are coming straight out of that equation. It's going publisher to reader. And so for a book festival, there's a big question about where do we go with that, and actually what are our audience that we currently have on our site? How do they relate to national, international trends? Because buying a book at a book festival is a very different thing to buying from a bookshop. So this app gave us a way of starting to measure some of that. The key thing that this app did for us, though, was that it gave us much more content that we could provide to our audiences than we could ever possibly hope to do ourselves. We have, in the book festival alone, 750 to 800 unique events over 18 days. I have a team of 2 full-time marketing staff and a couple of assistants during the peak summer period. There's no way that they can provide this kind of rich content that our audience are looking for. And that's where the semantic web and the interaction between our data and other data becomes really important. That whole site, the content is automatically populated. We have our own Edinburgh International Book Festival data set, which we're fortunate is really well structured. And the key thing that it has is it has the ISBNs of all the books that all the authors are talking about. From that, we can automatically link into the API that the iBookstore provide, that Amazon provide, and that the Guardian provide, and combine all that to make rich content for the audience. So using the semantic web, the web of data, of information that sits underneath the web that we all look at, allows us to make much more value than we ever could before. If you're interested in semantic web and rich content, I'd really recommend checking out The Guardian, the UK Guardian newspaper, and particularly their open platform. It is, without a doubt, the most significant, most useful, and most filterable data set of news and media content internationally. And it allows people to do really quite exciting things. So I mentioned the semantic web. I've sort of jumped ahead. How did all of these people at Culture Hack Scotland manage to create all of this so quickly? They did it because the Edinburgh Festivals exposed the Festival Listings API in 2011. This is the first time this had been attempted to provide a machine-readable data set of all of the festival's listings across all 12 festivals. We piloted it last year. We're expanding on it and adding more data into it for 2012. The API has the shows that are on, the performances, the pricing, which can be quite different across different festivals. It has accessibility information, things like whether venues have steps, whether they are BSL or ASL, I guess, for you guys, interpreted sign language, whether they are audio described, all those kinds of things, and also age ranges. Are they for children? Are they for adults? What kind of age of children are they? And importantly, geolocations of all of the shows that are happening during the festival. The Festival Listings API solves some of those problems that Kath was talking about how do we get that data out there that people want? How do we do it in a way that we can still control it? How do we do it in a way that we can make sure it's always fresh, so that if people are doing listings of the festivals, how can they make sure that they're up to date? Importantly, it also allows people to filter that data differently to how we think they should filter it. And that's really important. When you have 4.2 million audience, when you have that number of shows, and when you have a core of 12 festivals who've been doing this a while, it's easy for us, and it's important for us, to filter that data in a way that makes sense to most of our users. I was at a session yesterday on open data and open innovation, and they were saying, you know, there's a lot of national governments who think that putting open data out there is enough. And it's not. Governments still have to interpret that data so that people don't have to spend their whole lives trying to figure out what the government's doing. Festivals are like that. We need to do the best approximation of what most people will find useful that we can. But there's always a niche case for people who have particular interests, particular needs, and that's where having an API allows third parties to take that information and serve it up in a way that's useful to that minority that we could never hope to serve ourselves. Our innovation approach at the Edinburgh Festivals, though, goes beyond the kind of the open data and the specifics of opening up access to some of that. It's also about building an innovation culture across the festivals, generally. And there's kind of three strands to that. There's a strand that's about building a community around the festivals of people who can help us. There's a strand that's about iteration, of recognising that we can't jump into this and suddenly catch up to where everyone else is. And also, that's not how the little startups that work do it. The little startups that work do it by iterating. The big companies that try and achieve everything all at once do it by spending 2 or 3 years designing what should happen. So iteration is important. And most importantly, being open, not just with our data, but more generally. I'll give some examples in a moment. The main thing is that this kind of approach allows us to control some of the risks around what would otherwise be potentially enormous technology, social media investment, and do it in a way that allows us to produce things that are more and more amazing. So building community. Building community is a really straightforward thing. It's introducing inspiring people to each other. Out of Culture Hack Scotland and some of the work that we were doing through the festival's lab, we introduced a new media company, small new media company called Trigger, based in Scotland, to the Edinburgh Art Festival. That's all we did. We introduced them. And they had an amazing conversation and developed a mixed media, real world, virtual world piece of art called Detours that they staged at the 2011 festival. That happened within the art festival's normal commissioning process. We didn't change anything. We just put some people together. And that's where community becomes important. An example of iteration would be the mobile app that the Fringe have. They started with a medium-scale pilot in 2010, which really focused just on providing listings information and concentrated specifically on iPhone. That had reasonably good take-up, but importantly, it generated really useful feedback about what people were using it for, what people wanted to see, how accessible it was. So 2011, they went through a second iteration of that, added in support for Android, added in ticket sales. And in 2011, that app saw 45,000 downloads and almost 750,000 sessions, which over a 3.5-week festival period and probably a sort of long tail of a month or two before that, and with very little investment in promotion and marketing, it's quite a major achievement. And finally then, openness. Open to audiences is a big thing. It's important. It's easy for us, the festivals, to decide what we think the audiences might want. It's easy for us to work with developers who have great ideas about what the audience might want. But it's really important that we close that loop and find out what the audience want. So this year we launched the Edinburgh Festival's Ideas Challenge, a community public idea generation site. People could vote, people could comment, and so on. There were prizes for the best ideas selected. And that was an interesting process. I think we'll iterate again over that before we do it next time, because particularly it proved difficult to generate suggestions that were specific to the festivals. A lot of the suggestions that came through were things which we recognise are genuinely problems for our audience about accommodation in Edinburgh, getting around the city, but things which are, although things we can talk to stakeholders and we can lobby for and we can hopefully identify to commercial partners that this is something there might be a market for, they're not something which we're in the business of doing. We don't provide accommodation. We don't build roads or run buses. But there were some useful suggestions for the festivals that came out of it as well. And one of the key things, in fact, was about accessibility across the festivals, both for disabled audiences and also for children and families. Trying to navigate a festival and take your family to events is a very different thing to trying to go on your own. Your risk profile is different, the information you need is different. And so we're working now over the next year to look at what we can do to provide new ways of getting accessibility-based navigation to our audience. And also it's about being open to new ideas, new things that are happening out in the world, new ways of looking at what we do. We did a project, I don't know, is anyone in the, are you aware of service design as a concept? Service design is an emerging, I'm going to take that as a no, rather than, yeah. Service design is an emerging field of design. It's like product design, which is a process that you work through to come up with how an iPhone should look, what it should feel like, but importantly, what it should do and how you should use it. And graphic design, which is about how you best communicate information to people. Service design is a strand of design that is about how do you design an intangible thing, a service, a way of running an organization to take into account the way that your users need to interact with it. So it's a sort of specialism or akin to, say, web usability design, which is about kind of customer flow through a website and how people will engage and what features they need. But it goes beyond web. It takes in, you know, how should you lay out your booking office? Where should you put the seating? What do you need in there? Do you need PowerPoints? Do you need Wi-Fi? How do you get information to people? And we worked with an emerging service design company in Scotland to produce what we call Festival Design DNA. It's an open access toolkit. It's available at design.festivalslab.com. And it's really there to provide a process for an organization that wants to look at how they run themselves and start thinking about it more from the perspective of what do our audiences, customers, participants, artists, journalists need us and want us to be doing, rather than how do we run the business currently and what are we going to change for next year. So I think we're hoping over the next little while that the Festival Design DNA and that toolkit will open up a new way of thinking in our organisations and more broadly, hopefully, across the cultural sector. And through that, help us to move forward in line with our audiences. So that's where we've got to at the moment. And I suppose the question now is, what does the future look like? Kath.
Yes, so really I think whatever the future holds for us, it will involve a lot of questions. The things that we are now thinking about working on are the things listed there. How do we use all of these ideas and things that we've come up with to really develop an audience, both in terms of getting our existing audiences to see more? We have a very big and loyal audience, but there's lots of things they don't see. And how do we develop those audiences further, whether that's international audiences are actually audiences at home that are just not engaging with the festivals, whether that's about disabled audiences, family audiences, all of those things. How do we really keep developing the ticketing alongside the information and listings? So we're exploring social ticketing this year. The Fringe particularly has such a strong word of mouth. If you've been in Edinburgh during the Fringe, you'll see it's still a very old-fashioned flyering community. People are always talking about, you know, what did you see, what's good, where did you see it, when's it on, and really trying to share that. And when people see something that they really love, then they love to share that with the audience. The people in Edinburgh themselves are very, very keen to, you know, to tell people about what's on. And how do we do that in social networks now? But how do we convert that into actual ticket sales for our artists? As Andrew talked about, you know, what role does the semantic web have to play in all of this? How can we really get content into all of these apps that we're producing or other people are producing to really enrich that experience for the audience? And then I guess the other thing is, what role does technology have to play in the actual form of the art itself? As Andrew says, mostly we're not producing a lot of events ourselves. At the Fringe, we're an open access festival. Anyone can do what they want. We're simply holding that and supporting that. But we are all festivals everywhere, and all of the festivals in Edinburgh are profoundly about the congregation of people in a place for a live experience. But actually now, what does technology have a role to play in that? There was a great thing at the Fringe last year called Ghost City, which was a virtual festival that took place in Edinburgh, featuring lots of artists, not just Fringe artists, there were book festival artists involved in that, where people responded to place and produced music or words and put that into locations that you could experience entirely virtually without even coming. So what's the role in that? How do we enhance the live experience with technology, I guess? And that's really the end of our presentation, and I wondered if you had any questions on it. Thank you. Yes.
You both work for Edinburgh Festival as a body.
Yeah, well, we work in our day jobs. I work for the Fringe, and Andrew works for the Book Festival. But we're both on the board of Festivals Edinburgh. So Festivals Edinburgh has an executive board, which is made up of us and the other directors of the other 10 festivals, but then has an executive and a staff who are employed by Festivals Edinburgh.
Was there a difficulty in convincing the executive staff of all of the organisations to do something so open?
Yes.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I think so. I think there was, and there is, and there always will be, because interestingly, openness breeds openness, and so the more you open up, the more you want to open up more, and the more that you raise new questions about what that means. And it's important, actually. Some of the data that we have is commercially sensitive. Some of it is people's private information. There are big questions that things like social and social ticketing raise in terms of how much is it appropriate for us to use people's email addresses to match them up across festivals and introduce them to, you know, actually, do they want that to happen? So it's important that conversation happens. But I think the way to get through that, I think, is to demonstrate at each step of the way why. I think the why is critical, and if you can demonstrate the why, and if you can iterate, and you can gradually move, then it becomes much easier to convince an organisation to start working that way.
Yeah, and it was difficult. I mean, in a fringe world, it was really difficult. And you know, I have a board that I report to, and it was difficult to convince them. We have traditionally been, as you know, as organisations have been in the past, really protectionist about the information that we have. And in a fringe landscape, that is not even ours. You know, it belongs to the artists who are making the festival. That's the point of it. But we do have a duty to get that out there. Those artists are coming. They're risking everything. You know, it's a financially onerous undertaking, it's creatively risky. It works if people come and see what they're doing. So we have, on one hand, we have a responsibility to get it out there, but we have to be very protectionist about it up to a point. And so we worked, I think for us it was about, we already understood that there was a basic need for that information in the world. People were scraping our websites, people were just doing things. If you don't give it to us, this is what we want to do with it, we're going to do it anyway. We'd rather do it with you. And a thing for the fringe, because it's open access and we don't, our job is to market the event as a whole. We never pick out one individual company over another and say, this is the one you should go and see. We say, here's the whole thing. And for us, we realised that if we didn't keep control of it, all that was going to happen was that bits of it were going to get out there into the world, and then the people who weren't in that were going to suffer for it. So, it was a philosophical shift, really, kind of, you know. Practically, it was quite easy. I think the difficult bit was making that shift. But I think, as with all of the work that we do through Festivals Edinburgh, there was something about that collective approach to it which made it a bit easier. You know, we're all individually, we're all, you know, nose to the grindstone, getting on with this stuff. It's a challenge for all of us. Actually, can we use Festivals Edinburgh and their staff to try and answer some of these questions for us? I think we would have got there, but I think it was easier for that. And there's something about all of this. It works very much in the innovation, but actually also in the environmental group. You know, there's lots of these things that are facing all of us as things that we want to engage with, that we want to develop. But you know, we're all cash-strapped charity arts organisations. We don't have a big staff, and so there's something in those areas that it's very good to even just get round the table and have the conversation and get yourself a little bit fired up and inspired by something, and then say, okay, you go away and work on this for us.
And I think the collective definitely aids, because as much as because you have a we ourselves as festivals have already gone through a process of opening. You know, I think that's a major thing that's happened in Edinburgh in the past five or six years. Festivals Edinburgh was formed in 2007, and we'd worked together before that, but that whole process of actually deciding to form Festivals Edinburgh, forming it, starting to work together, all of our individual organisations had already gone through a process of sharing information with people who maybe a year or two before we'd thought were competitors. Some of those conversations were really easy. There were obvious things where it made sense for us to work together. But there were conversations that we had about collective fundraising, for example, which is an incredibly difficult thing to deal with when you have 12 festivals, all who rely on fundraising, and all who have different relationships with different people. So
we pretty much abandoned that.
Yeah, you know. but having gone through that process, I think was good in terms of us learning as organisations that you could start exploring some of these things in the right framework, and that you could walk away if it didn't work.
And there's an interesting thing. I mean, I think I'll come to you in a minute. But I think the other thing about whether it would have worked without the collective is I think we would have done it individually. But there's a thing, that thing about audiences and trying to understand what an audience might want. Like if you're in Edinburgh in August and you want to see, you want to see Greg Proops at the Fringe, but you also want to see Australian Dance Theatre at the International Festival, and you want to see, you know, Norman Mailer at the Book Festival, God rest his soul. You know, you don't need to understand that those are different things. You shouldn't have to understand. You shouldn't have to go to three apps and three different websites to get that. It works most if it's all together. And the way that Festivals Edinburgh works, and I chair the board, and it's quite interesting, is that every festival has a right of veto. We never do anything if one festival says no, we don't want to do it, and we've never actually got to that point. So, like even the development fundraising group kind of decided to disband itself. It wasn't that somebody said, right, I'm not doing it. So it's, you know, it's a big experiment, really.
Um,
It actually worked slightly the other way around in the end. We launched a subset of the API at Culture Hack. So we put Culture Hack together as an event and got people along, and we got a whole range of data sets there from museums and galleries across. I mean, there were some really interesting ideas. There was a game that came out about stealing works of art from galleries across Edinburgh and dropping them off at fringe venues for other people to pick up, like, you know, real kind of mashups of stuff.
Just a visualization. So in Edinburgh, there's the Royal Mile, which is the big kind of historic street. It's outside our office. It's where everybody goes to fly. It's where the box office is. It's just full of people. It gets a million people up and down the street over the course of the festival. And it's got, you know, people sensors to track the number of people on it. And somebody just did a beautiful visualization of what that looked like, you know. It was, so there's some of it was,
yeah, so there was
just art,
so there was a lot of different data there, and so we kind of knew ahead of Culture Hack there was going to be enough data for people to have fun with and to entice them along, and then in the immediate run-up to the event we launched a subset of the data, because actually that Culture Hack allowed us to see what people wanted it to have in it and needed it to have in it and how they would interact with it. So Ben Wordmuller, who was our geek in residence at that point and is here at South by Southwest somewhere, he now works for a company called Lataku, by the way, who are totally revolutionising the way that video is sent, so you should check that out. He worked with developers on site at Culture Hack to kind of build the API for them, and then we released it to the world afterwards. And people signed up for it. So there are API projects that came through in the kind of June, July, August after Culture Hack. And by and large, the API is completely open. The fringe, because there are some slightly more careful nuances around that data, it's by approval. But pretty much the rest of it is, you know, you sign up and you get an API key and you start using it.
But also we don't work very far in advance. So the International Festival, which is in August, will publish their programme next week, but we've got some information. Some of the listings and tickets are on EdFringe at the moment, but we won't have the full programme until the very end of May. The Book Festival doesn't do theirs till June, so actually, you know, we work quite close to. We didn't want to wait until we had that entire data set to do it, because then we only have like 63 days before the festival happens. So. Yeah.
Yes. Book Festival. But the Book Festival site started at Culture Hack and then was developed out of that. So that's kind of one. A number of the media organisations that we had traditionally in the past been providing listings to anyway, but have been doing in Excel spreadsheets and things, a number of those started to use the API, and I hope more will use it this year. The lead time was tight for them last year.
Yeah, and certainly in a fringe world, there's lots of free or digital media outlets that grew up specifically for the fringe. There's a site called Broadway Baby. There's a publication called 3 Weeks, and there's things that pretty much that exist to cover the fringe. And we've never been able to give them listings before because we just couldn't get it together. And they all used the API this year, so they didn't. Yeah, they'll do more with it and linking to reviews, linking to where you are. We did that on our app this year, which came out of it. So, you know, it's 3:10. What's starting in the next 20 minutes? How far away is it? Where can I get to it? Are there tickets available for it? All of those kind of things came out of it. And there'll just be more of that, I think, now that we've done.
And there were some more nice... There's another couple of visualizations that people did in the run-up to the summer. There's one which allows you to... It sort of generates like a almost like a wallpaper, but of kind of emoticons, but done based on the shows that you've been to. There's quite a few of those kind of projects that have come up out of it as well. There's a big list actually. If you go through festivalslab.com, we have a showcase there, and you can see on that the projects that we've started ourselves, and also some of the most interesting API users. And we obviously don't list all the sort of, you know, these people who've got listings on their site. They're using the API. There's that as well. But there have been some interesting creative things happening around it.
And even just for our own, you know, we all have our own websites, but we have a joint website, edinburghfestivals.com, you know, so even just pulling it through that, you know, we'll do ticketing on that this year through a portal that linked back. So, you know, there's just lots of things that... There's lots of things that were happening anyway, and so as a kind of user, I guess you don't notice so much the difference, but for us organisationally, it just became a whole lot easier, you know?
Yeah.
So that means it's much darker bonus than having well-known authors of practice.
Not yet. It'd be interesting to see how it goes. Interestingly, in terms of book festivals, we haven't yet noticed much in terms of ebook. And interesting, I said the app gave us a useful way of seeing what our audience, how our audience were. They weren't that interested in ebook at that point. I think ebook is. I think if I was a high street bookstore, I'd be really, really worried. But book festivals, we've seen, for example, our print book sales on site last year and the year before were pretty much on level with where they'd always been. And UK high street print book sales dropped 10% the year before, year on year, and 8% the year after that. So we're definitely kind of in a slightly different place. It's as much a souvenir at a book festival as it is a book.
Yeah,
you know, it's a different.
And you get it signed.
And you get it signed, and you have a.
But they're pretty well-known authors anyway.
They are pretty well-known. Well, they are and they aren't. I mean, our festival has probably one of the larger numbers of first published or first published in the UK in translation of any of the UK literature festivals.
But also 5 laureates in the last 5 years.
Yeah, we got, but I would say probably the... if anything, I think ebook will challenge how we deal with authors and how we program, because... Currently, publishers are a big research opportunity for us, and if publishers are less part of that loop, we were having a conversation last week about there are some major name authors now who've achieved bestseller status and have now decided, having done that, they don't need a publisher anymore. They're going to go straight to ebook themselves. There's a big question about how we engage with that, but I think that will be much more about our internal process. I think the content of the program will be similar, if not maybe actually broader, because I think one of the things about ebook is it has a completely different model. It's a much more decentralized model of publishing. So maybe we'll see more crowdsourcing or, who knows.
Good. One more and then I think we're done. Yeah.
Yes, we did. We had feedback to... there was feedback. There was actually interesting. There was feedback from users to each other as the challenge went on, and then we had feedback to the. I think the top 25 public voted ideas. We went back to each of them with a sort of write up of what we thought of the idea and whether or not we were going to take it forward or lobby someone else to take it forward. I think that's really important. Actually, I think if you do any kind of open thing with an audience, people need to know that you heard them. And that you've, even if it's something that's completely not right for your organisation or for your group of organisations, which happened with a couple of the ideas, you do have to be able to go back to everyone and say, thanks for the idea. It's more challenging than that, but thanks for the idea, and we'll definitely see if there's a way of...
Yeah, maybe it's just not
responding
an idea.
To your need.
And maybe it's just not an idea for now, or maybe there's something else that we can do you came up with that solution, so now that we know that that's an issue, maybe there's something else that we can do that, even if it's not that, at least we can come up with a different solution. All right, just give me the 1 minute signal. Are you all done? Lovely.
Excellent.
Thank you very much for coming.
We'll put up on the screen as you're going out some people to follow on Twitter if you want to know more. And also, as I said, festivalslab.com is the kind of starting off point for all of our innovation work. You can get to Culture Hack Scotland, which is happening again in 2012 as a national programme. And you can get to Edinburgh Festivals, the design toolkit, all of that is available through there. So do keep having a conversation with us.
Thank you very
much. Thank you.